Welcome to Quorum by CSD, the Global Dialogues and Symposium Forum on Sustainable Development. In this podcast, Pragya Khanna, Global Head, Sustainability, NASPERS Process, shares with Seema Arora, Deputy Director General, Confederation of Indian Industry, her views on the role of investment companies in enabling sustainable value creation, the need for responsible investments, and the contours of the roadmap for a net zero future. But before that, let's hear from Seema about this new platform.
I'm very, very excited to host this first edition of CII Center of Excellence for Sustainable Development's online forum, Quorum. This platform, which will host global dialogues with leaders from across the world, thought leaders, practitioners, providers of technology, is really our attempt to facilitate open dialogue on key issues of sustainability and bring different voices from around the globe and have insights from their learnings, from their experiences. As we know, this whole area of sustainability has become so important. We as CII Center of Excellence for Sustainable Development launched this platform, Quorum, at our 19th Sustainability Summit in September this year. And we are really delighted that we are able to bring this first edition. And the first edition of Quorum is on the theme of setting the stage for a sustainable future with responsible investments. So I think this is a very, very, very useful topic that we have chosen.
And now let's listen to the podcast interview.
Now, I'm really proud and privileged to welcome our speaker, Pragya. She's from Process. And before I introduce Pragya, I want to just say a few words about Process. Process is a global consumer internet investment group, and it's one of the largest technology investors in the world. Process, is keenly aware that businesses and business decisions cause various kinds of environmental, social ramifications, and there are impacts. And I think they take this responsibility very seriously. Process strives to embed sustainability criteria, not only in their capital allocation choices, but also in the operations as a group. And that is really, really important. And I think Process is doing great work by creating sustainable value, by showing how they are investing in companies that improves people's everyday lives through technology. But more about that from Pragya. And Pragya Khanna, who is the Global Head of Sustainability at NASPERS Process, who joins us as our first or the inaugural speaker for CII CESD's Quorum. Welcome, Pragya. And she has joined NASPERS Process in 2021 to build and lead the sustainability department for the group and its companies. She is responsible for overseeing the transition of a diverse portfolio of technology companies towards a net zero target. And I think that is what the whole world needs. In this first edition of Quorum, as I said, where we are talking about setting the stage for a sustainable future with responsible investments, Pragya will share about the group's journey and really what are the new growth opportunities they're unlocking by enabling value creation, sustainable value creation at scale. And so over to you, Pragya, and could you just, give us an idea of the vision? What is the philosophy or process around sustainability? How are you actually traveling this path? So welcome, Pragya, and over to you.
So thank you so much, Seema ji, for having me here. And congratulations on your first Quorum podcast. I wish you much success and what a much needed way of bringing sustainability messages and sharing experiences. So I have joined NASPERS Process about 4 years ago. What is really meaningful about our company is that we are one of the first that is a company that comes from the global south, from South Africa. And we have transitioned towards having multiple stakes in businesses across the world. And the beauty of it is because we come from the global south, we believe we are able to understand risk, price risk, and therefore take better risk. We have a good risk appetite for our investments across the world. I'm very proud of the fact that our portfolio has a lot of exposure in India. We have many, many companies there, and we continue to believe in the growth potential of India as an economy and the opportunity of innovation and technology development and harnessing the power of technology in India. So we are, we stand behind our belief on harnessing technology to solving for sustainable problems globally. So thank you very much for having me here.
Thank you, Pragya. And I think it's really great that you brought in the context of the Global South, which is so important in so many of these global conversations, which are primarily driven by the Global North, typically, especially on climate and sustainability. It's very heartening to see the focus on by your organization, by you personally, on the Global South. And you rightly mentioned the risk context is completely different. Therefore, the appetite is different, and we have to look at it differently. I also want to just understand from you that what are your, as process, as an organization, what are the long-term, short-term goals for reducing, carbon emissions across your portfolio companies? Because it's important as you invest, how do you look at this whole thing?
So within our investment thesis, one of the excluded sectors for us is carbon-intense business models. So by default, we are building a portfolio of asset-light, very carbon-light businesses, whether you see, edtech platforms or businesses like PayU, which is a fintech platform in India. By default, our core thesis of how we allocate money helps us to really build a future that's transitioning to a net zero reality. So that's one. However, I think, it's absolutely imperative for every actor to be focusing on whatever impact they have to limit that impact and minimize, because, unfortunately, the impacts of climate change are most felt in our jurisdictions, in the Global South, even though we may not be responsible for the historical emissions. So as a company, as a group, we have set ourselves targets at two levels. These are science-based targets. They have been verified by the Science-Based Target Initiative. So one is on an operational level for the corporate holding company, which is, understandably, it would be on our energy use, so scope one and scope two. It is our commitment to be at zero scope one and scope two emissions by 2028. Actually, I can share with you, we already achieved zero last year through transitioning to renewable energy across our across the energy use. It's a very small footprint. We're a few offices, so it's easy to do. We're not big manufacturing or extractive, so it's very easy to do. So I don't want to take big kudos for it. However, maintaining zero is our is the priority going forward, so that we're not we know how to decouple our growth from growth in emissions as well. So that's one at the holding company level. And then secondly, we're an investor. So we have to set targets on financed emissions. And within that, we have committed to, and this is a little bit technical, so I bear your consideration here. We have committed to 50% of our portfolio across the world to have set science-based targets themselves. Now here, what is really important to highlight is the notion of target setting for businesses that are not yet listed. These are private entities most of the time that are struggling to even make a profit. But as they grow, they know that the dot on the horizon for them is to ensure they grow, but they do not grow in their emissions at the same time. And we encourage and support them in setting science-based targets that are verified. Here, Seemaji, I think there is one element that has to be highlighted by all of us in the Global South towards the target setting frameworks and the standards that are mostly coming from the Global North. On if you know within national target setting or country level target setting, there is within the Kyoto Protocol the principle of CBDR, common but differentiated responsibilities. And therefore, you see the discrepancies or differentiation in targets across different countries. Within our own portfolio, Brazil is a really important one, and they have 2050. China is big, they have 2060, India is big, it's 2070, South Africa has yet, they're at 2050 as well. So that allows for these variances basis the development stage of the country. However, that is not allowed for in corporate target setting. Regardless if I'm a business that is operating in Germany, Sweden, the US, with a completely different access to infrastructure, capital, the type of policy enablement that has been there for years towards renewables generation, I have to follow the same pathway, whether I'm in South Africa, India, Brazil, as my peers in the global north. And I think this differentiation has to be highlighted, because you cannot, as a company, set a target that is completely divorced from your operational reality, the context of your country. I'll give you an example. We own some of the biggest e-tail businesses in South Africa. And within South Africa, as you may know, there's a huge, the renewable energy to green to gray mix is 95% gray, 5% green. Now, no matter what the company tries to do, we, of course, with on-site renewables, but at one point, the ability to decarbonize is it reaches a ceiling. You're not able to, because renewable energy is simply not available in the ecosystem. So the, in a context where we tell our portfolio companies that are primarily in the global south to set science-based targets, they face a far steeper challenge than their peers in the global north. And our thesis here is that we're not saying we're not going to set targets. We still are full steam ahead in setting targets, but we do want this recognized that our challenge is far steeper. The companies that we are asking to set targets are far steeper. So that's one of the critical elements. The second one is that as an investor, when we set a portfolio target, you can use two levers for your anchor of the target. So one is revenues. You know, you say, how do you define what's your portfolio? So you can say, I'm going to define basis the revenues that I have every year from different companies. So let's say if there are, you know, we say 50%, so whichever 50% of our revenues should be covered with this SBTI. But actually, that would not be meaningful for us, because as an investor in a couple of large tech businesses, we came in very, very early in China and they went very big. So they have already set science-based targets. We would have nothing to do. We could walk away without actually needing to do any work. So we went for the slightly more considered and more meaningful route, which is we set a target, anchoring it in invested capital. Where are we investing our capital and where do we have most influence? So that is where we have seen, we last year, two of our companies set targets and we reached 23.4%. This year, we're working with two other companies. We really hope to achieve our 50% ahead of 28, but working with all of our companies towards that.
Thank you, Pragyanu. That's very, very useful to know how you yourself as a company and organization, you're right, you know, small footprint, but still the making that effort and ensuring that you stay net zero is a big thing. So kudos for that. Making sure that you have a target. Not many companies have a target. So going net zero and having a target and achieving it is good. And I really think what you highlighted about the differentiation of the standards, even for corporate India, I think is an important element. And this is true for, in fact, all kinds of standards that are set globally, whether it's the ISSB or, you know, we saw the CDP requirements or the TCFD, although those are more principle-based. Wherever there are standards and requirements, the context of the Global South, and it is basically the operating context, as you said, the infrastructure availability is different, the labor, land, all issues are different. So that has to be contextualized a lot. And I think this is where organizations like CII also continuously, and during our B20 also continuously, we try to bring in. I want to also expand this conversation a little bit around, you know, how do you actually encourage other types of, beyond just looking at carbon, you know, are you looking at encouraging waste reduction, recycling, circular economy practices? And coupled with that is, you know, also that, you know, the energy sector is a major sector. So, you know, are you also looking at that? And because that plays a huge part in the decarbonization. So just your ideas around those two. Yeah.
No, absolutely. I'll start with the first, which is on circular economy and waste reduction. If we just look at where we have a material footprint within our portfolio of companies, we own, we have a share in multiple, you know, global food delivery businesses. If I think about 30 logos within our investment portfolio. And what is critical, their waste generated, as you know, from having ordered food and received it, is the packaging. So waste linked to packaging. We've been focusing on that for the past 10 years. I think we have your colleagues from the India Plastics Pact also on the call. We've been trying to understand what are the replacement materials? How can we reduce? How can we recycle? And how can we critically enable this knowledge to be shared across multiple different platforms? Because there is no harmonization on guidance on packaging. You know, what is the right type of material? Is there a fine? Are there, do you, as a producer or a user in the value chain, when you benefit commercially, you must take responsibility for the waste that is being generated in your business value chain. So there is no really homogeneity in this across the globe. What we've been trying to do, working with the plastic pacts, both in South Africa, India, other parts of the world, is to try and bring this at a common level of understanding so that we create the principles and demystify this, make it really simple. A person who is buying the packaging, a person who's selling the packaging, as a buyer, it's very difficult for me to know what is a sustainable material. Okay, if I eliminate plastics, do I switch to cardboard? Is that going to be the answer? Well, not necessarily, because if the cardboard is left, you know, if it is burnt and this disposed of, it actually can be far more toxic for the environment than well reused, recycled plastic. So it's a bit of a complex topic, and we're working towards simplifying this and bringing a parity in the level of understanding across at least where we can, which is our group of food delivery and e-tail businesses. We have asked them to start mapping. But again, you know, interestingly, if you think about it, the differences in cuisine and differences in culture, it's super easy to maybe transition to a certain more sustainable packaging for delivery of hamburgers, but not for curries. So there is a lot of work being done across all of our businesses on trying to find out what is sustainable, but what also does work. We invested not so long ago in a project for reuse, so taking back, reverse logistics. There are, again, cultural mindsets around this. You know, the Indian consumer does not want to eat food or receive food that is in a box that has been used multiple times. And so we're trying to find use cases. In India, there are some startups that are doing this, but we invested in a project this was during, we have assets also in Ukraine during the war, and there were immediate refugee response centers where there was huge amounts of waste, packaging waste, food waste being generated on a daily basis. So we invested in setting up a reuse facility there. So I think there are some cases where food packaging can be done, for example, at hospitals or in schools or large institutions, office buildings. So there is an ability to transition where possible and then try and find alternative materials in other places. So a lot of time is spent in this from our team. We also launched a report on this last year, and we continue to work on this. However, it is the most difficult one to crack, simply because every packaging material has some sort of a negative impact. So how do we come to the, how do you advise which is the best packaging material? Working with your teams on this as well. On circularity, for us, it's a business opportunity. So we have investments in secondhand trade platforms. We own OLX, which allow for the trade of goods, you know, whether it's clothes, whether it's electronics. And we actually do an annual report within the GHG, the GHG protocol. There is no allowance for, calculation of avoided emissions, because there are some business models that are native sustainable, that are inherently sustainable, but they still need to, there is no guidance on how do you calculate emissions avoided through your business. And there's a lot of greenwashing, potential around it. We recognize that, but we launch a report every year on the circularity, the reuse of tech, of the hundreds and thousands of electronics, clothes, household goods, other sort of items that are sold on our classified businesses. And it's a business for us. So it's a core opportunity, circularity. And I think that's something that for us is within that, but also within our e-tail businesses, to see how we can encourage more reuse. We have a new business that we've invested in that does refurbishing. In India, recycling, reuse, if there's residual value in a piece of thread, it will be used. So that's not new for us, but we're trying to build this mentality in the rest of the world as well.
Great, Pragya. These are very, very useful insights, I think, for our audience to really understand that how it's embedded in your business. And that's why how do you make sure that whatever you do, it resonates with these kind of principles. I think you rightly said the one size doesn't fit all is one thing that I pick up from it. So every geography, every consumer, every material has different challenges. And therefore, one size doesn't fit all. It's a continuous evolution, continuous learning. And that is what we aim to also do through CII. I'm glad you're working with our team at the India Plastic Pact and CII. It's great to have partners like you to take the work forward. I also want to just understand that, you know, from you that, you know, in your portfolio, in driving sustainability solutions, what is the role of technology? How much of the tech component are you seeing? Are you seeing new frontier technologies, AI? What are you seeing? I just want to understand from you and what are the insights you see?
No, so, you know, when we see all the negative news, Seemaji, on, you know, gloom and doom on climate change, I still preserve a bit of hope because of technology. We humans have reached the moon. We can do this. We can do this. So I, within our investment practices as well, first of all, you know, a lot of the core focus segments where we invest in are promoting more responsible way of consumption. I'll give you an example. One of our largest portfolios is in education technology businesses. Now, making learning accessible online to billions of users without having the physical infrastructure of buildings, having to print books, commuting, it is learning accessible when you want it, where you want it, how you want it, without the related emissions around it. So that's one of the areas, and these are that's edtech. Same for fintech businesses. If you remember, you know, the old times of doing banking and accessing financial services, you get into your vehicle or a public transport, you get to the bank, there are lots of people at the bank, there's lots of cash being printed. I mean, India is at the forefront of it. You know, we have a few of our portfolio companies. One is Dehat, for example. You know, they work with 2.6 million farmers, providing them services. And you see everywhere in every niche, a street stall vendor, everyone will have a QR code. So cashless transactions, actually the net environmental impact is very significant. So we believe that this is just technology that we have adopted seamlessly that already has helped us be better consumers, to be able to be part of this transition to a greener economy. So that's one. But actually there's a lot of impact that technology can play in uncovering new segments and how we can. So a lot of our businesses, you know, again, in India, there is a large percentage of the population that's vegetarian, but not globally. And we know the emissions linked to meat. So our ventures team has been looking at investments in synthetic biology. So meat replacement, for example. We also use AI within our business models to see how they can be made more efficient, or AI enabled energy infrastructure supporting software. That's one of the deals we just completed. It's called Niara, and it's based out in the US. But we are constantly on the lookout for sustainability native business models. And in India, actually, one of our most recent investments, well, not about a year ago, was in a fashion company, Fashion for Good. It's the good fashion company called Vergio. They use AI to predict, to forecast the kind of volumes that would be needed for customer demand. A large part of fashion industry is, especially fast fashion, is waste generated because of inventory, lost inventory. So they are tackling that problem and then also reusing the inventory that was wasted. That already goes very, very far in enabling all of us as consumers to be more sustainable. So there is a lot of tech innovation out there, and we're very keen and open to be investing in that.
Very interesting. Now, you gave so many, you know, insights of different types of, you know, businesses across your portfolio companies and different, you know, businesses coming up with different innovations, different ideas. So there are lots of best practices. How do you ensure these are shared across your different, you know, portfolio companies? What is your mechanism? I'm interested in understanding.
No, Seemaji, absolutely right. You know, what we realized is that we are sitting on this unique opportunity to be a convener. And initially, there was a bit of a fear of, you know, will the companies want to share, or are they going to get, you know, competitive? We often also just get so busy, especially, you know, when you're a startup that's trying to survive. You're so busy trying to survive that it's very difficult to lift your head up and think, oh, maybe I'm already doing sustainability things. How do I build it sustainability by design? As I build my company, how do I already put the processes and policies in place so that as we grow, we do not also grow in emissions? So we started an internal program. It's about 4 years old now. It's called the Sustainability Accelerators Network. Regardless of our shareholding in a company, so whether it's 2%, whether it's 100%, everybody's welcome to join. We have at the moment, and we do these quarterly calls. What came out of it is that there were two niche areas of interest, and they keep developing. So EVs, electric vehicles, and fleet transitions was one. So now we have a working group on fleet transitions, and the second one on packaging, and the third on gig workers. And regardless whether these were companies in America or the Middle East or Asia or India or Africa, they all have exactly the same challenges. And it's fascinating to see, you know, they're like magnets. Once they were given this opportunity, so at the last call, if I'm not mistaken, we had about 40 companies participating.
Wonderful. I think one of the things that I always say is that the time is of essence in this journey of decarbonization, because we are already late. Yeah, we don't have the luxury of time, and we don't want to reinvent the wheel. So I think what you're doing in terms of, you know, making sure that across the network that you have of different companies, making sure that they all learn from each other. And that's primarily also what one of the things that CII tries to do all the time, that we share best practices, we highlight the things that work so that all can learn and we all can go on this journey much faster. Now, I also want to understand that how do you, you know, in terms of your collaborations and partnerships, how do you partner and collaborate to pursue these goals with industry, with association, similar organization? What is your, pathway there? How do you do that?
Thank you. This is actually a wonderful one. This really came to us about a year and a half ago. As we were working with our Sustainability Accelerator Network, the working group on fleet electrification, you know, we just did some data analysis over there and we realized just five of our companies do 3.8 billion deliveries a year. And we thought to ourselves, if we were to move these to zero emissions deliveries, it's a monumental impact on pollution, not just emissions, but pollution and then health and all the other related development impacts is just phenomenal, this opportunity in front of us. And there is no industry association for on-demand delivery platforms. There, we haven't encountered it. So we thought, you know, what we're going to do is we reached out to the top 10. We did a bit of a roadshow, went and reached out to the top 10 delivery platforms globally, other than our own portfolio, outside. And it didn't matter whether they were competitors to our businesses. For example, in India, we work both with Swiggy, that's one of our businesses, but also with Zomato on this specific piece. There is no, you know, for procuring a two-wheeler in your business, there is no competition. So there shouldn't be none for electric vehicles either. What we've come together with, and this has been very much of a co-creation process, is we're joining hands with a whole, some of the largest delivery platforms globally, along with India, Africa, represented from all over the world, to commit to 50% of our deliveries to be zero emissions by 2030. Nobody has put pressure on us. There is no environmental NGO hanging off our, you know, buildings and putting banners. No external policymaker has done this. In fact, policymakers may sometimes be slightly divergent in their opinions on this. We have come together and this is going to be announced not too long in the future, in very early next year. We're going to be doing a shared public statement on this. But just imagine the monumental impact of, if our companies is 3.8 billion deliveries a year, you're looking at about 10 to 15 billion deliveries a year being zero emissions. And that's one of the ways that we do it. We want to try and use our convening power for this.
Wonderful. I think this is really important, that how the power of collaboration can actually bring change at scale. While we all can do it individually, but the moment we collaborate, And we need to collaborate because the goal is common, is all I say. And I think that's what beautifully, you know, is being demonstrated by what you are trying to do. So congratulations on that as well.
You know what, when you were talking about collaboration and co-learning, what we realized is that we all believe we are unique, but actually we are just like each other. So when we're talking about fleet electrification in Germany or fleet electrification in India, we have exactly the same problems. So whether it is the enabling policy, the technology, the financing, all of that. So there is an immense opportunity to not reinvent the wheel.
So Pragya, any concluding thoughts before we kind of wind up this inaugural episode? Over to you for any concluding thoughts.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I think this is just getting out of our daily routine and getting our heads up and listening and learning from each other is an absolutely critical part of innovation. You know, we need to be able to disrupt ourselves, disrupt our own thinking, because when we get stuck in the same regular, you know, the daily grind, we often forget the bigger picture. So this is an absolutely wonderful way of getting your head out and thinking of the bigger picture, learning from others. And I look forward to being an audience in the future as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Pragya. It was an absolute delight to have you for our first episode. And I'm sure there'll be a lot more that we will do together as Prosus and with you. And thank you for understanding the thought behind this particular, you know, forum that we have created. And I'm sure we will be able to, you know, bring more and more such useful insights and conversations to a global audience as we want to connect and bring the world together on thinking about issues which, as you rightly said, a lot of us all know about these, but unless we get out and start looking at the big picture, change will not happen at the pace we want. So thank you very much and have a very nice day. Thank you for taking time. And I want to also thank the audience for their time today, this afternoon, for joining us. Thank you very much. Goodbye and have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. To sign up for the newsletter and to be a part of the next edition of Quorum, write to the team on CESDEngage@cii.in.